It's time now to talk with Rick Steves, travel writer and author extraordinaire, public television, public radio host. We join Rick via Zoom. I can see you on the screen here. Can you hear us okay?
I can hear you fine. I hope you can hear me.
I can, just fine. It's we've caught you at home in Edmonds tonight, and we're glad that we're able to get you in a place where you're comfortable and you can answer questions for our listeners for the next hour or so.
Sounds like fun. You can always catch me at home these days.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second. Our event donors tonight are Strong Solutions, Hamilton Studio, MTR Communications, and Thomas Hammer Coffee Roasters. And I've been thinking over the last week about you as we hear more about the pandemic becoming a little worse over in Europe. When you hear that news and you think about when can I go back, well, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's a waiting game, and we just have to be patient. We are in the privileged part of the world, in the United States and in Europe, and we're on a glide path to normalcy, but there'll be some bumps in the road. And the question is not when are we going to be ready, but if you're traveling, it's when are we and they going to be ready. And for a while, they were ahead of us, and then we were ahead of them, and right now, they're dealing with some difficulties, and I think we're getting our act together, but there's a lot of Americans that are resistant to the vaccination. And I'm just thinking this is a societal challenge. We all gotta get on board together before we can let this ship sail.
How closely are you watching the attitudes about vaccines, both the AstraZeneca vaccine and all the other vaccines that are going on around the country, in terms of where do I have to get vaccinated in order to be able to go someplace, or, you know, quarantine times, all of that? How closely do you pay attention to it?
I don't pay attention to it at all, Jerry. I'm not going to be, from a business point of view, you mean from like when our tour is going to be going and so on. I'm not going to be the first out of the gate. I just know that individuals will be the bushwhackers. Individuals will travel. And then over time, it'll get more, you know, solid and stable and predictable. And then organized bus tours will go. And that's really our work. I don't want to go over there when we're in this interim period where it's kind of travel, but we're all eating in bubbles so we don't get anybody's germs. My, you know, social distancing and the Rick Steves style of travel have very little to do with each other. When I go to Paris, I want to be kissed on the cheeks. And when I go to Rome, I want to pack into the piazza and get my gelato and stroll with the people on the passeggiata down those pedestrian boulevards. And when I go to the west coast of Ireland and I step into a wonderful pub, I want to clink glasses with people who really believe strangers are just friends who've yet to meet. That's not very much social distancing. And we're going to get there. I got no doubt we're going to get there, but it's just going to take a few months longer than what we'd like. So we got to be patient.
And how much can you take the lead from the folks, your tour guides who are over there and living in those places?
Well, I've got 100 people on my staff here in Edmonds, and I've got 100 freelance guides that work with me in Europe. And I can keep my staff employed, and we're committed to that. We've got 100 people on our staff. We've trimmed our sales. And we're, you know, working a little less than full time, but we've all got our health care and we're still working, doing what we can. We're not getting any revenue, of course, but we're investing in our infrastructure and producing, you know, content. And for us, in a lot of ways, content is king. But in Europe, my guides they're just waiting. They've got very little opportunity to make money. Some countries are more generous than others in taking care of people during this difficult time. But they're just waiting for travel to start again, and then they're chomping at the bit to get tour guiding. So it's a waiting game. And, you know, you can have a cute little apartment in Paris or Florence or Vienna, but if you're stuck in that apartment and can't go out, location, 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 you got a lousy location. Other people in the countryside, they have a garden, they have fresh air, and they can get through this a lot easier. So it's difficult, more so for some than others, and it is just a matter of patience. You know, patience is not an American forte. It's certainly not a Rick Steves forte, but lately patience is my middle name, and it's just hunker down, take care of your neighbors, embrace the science, you can't have some people pass the pandemic and others not. This is all or nothing, I think, and we just got to work together and be patient.
Doug Nadvornik with Rick Steves, and we're inviting you to call in to 328-5729 or 1-800-328-5729. I have a list of questions for Rick, but frankly, we'd much rather hear your questions, and we'll get to those immediately if you call in, or you can go to our Facebook page, and you can leave a question there. We have Beth and Stephanie out there watching our Facebook page. So let's go to Richard, who has called in early. He's planning a trip to Cape, we think it's Linea Islands off of Africa. Are you the place you're familiar with, Rick?
Nope.
Okay, so I guess we'll not worry about that question.
I'm sorry about that, but Europe is in my business name. It's Rick Steves Europe, and that's the waiting pool for world exploration as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and yet we've seen you do public television programs in other parts of the world, for example, that's Ethiopia true. And others. Why have you expanded your television programs beyond Europe?
Well, you know, I do my basic thing is Europe. I teach people how to travel in Europe. I write guidebooks to Europe. I spend 100 days a year in Europe making sure I'm up to date. And I've got, you know, on public television, we've done probably 140 episodes over the year, cutting Europe into 140 half-hour slices. And that's been my focus and my goal and my expertise. But I love taking advantage of my platform in public television to grapple with a topic that is important. And a lot of us smart, curious people are still steep on the learning curve. And I like to go there and learn about it and then report on it from a traveler's perspective. So I've done the Holy Land. We've gone to Iran. We recently went to Ethiopia and Guatemala to learn about the practical value of foreign aid. And those are wonderful challenges for me as a teacher and as somebody who cares about America being part of the family of nations. So for political educational purposes, I'll take my TV crew to a place like that. But I don't really learn about those places like a guidebook writer would. I went to Ethiopia and Guatemala not to travel to Ethiopia and Guatemala, but those were my classroom for illustrating the fundamentals of poverty and the value of different kinds of modern and effective foreign aid. So I used Ethiopia and Guatemala, and they were great classrooms for that, but I didn't go to any of the famous sites that you'd expect me to go in those countries. A lot of people are asking about a vaccination passport and if we need to travel with a special passport in the future. And I don't know why people are kind of anxious about this, because when I was earlier in my traveling days, we always had what we called the yellow international certificate of vaccination tucked into our passport. And that was when we had to show that we had taken this or that shot in order to get into Ireland or to get into Morocco or to get into Turkey. And I had to get that to go into Ethiopia just 2 years ago. And in the future, I would imagine countries are going to want some assurance that whoever wants to get into their country for tourism or business or whatever will have their shots. And I think that's a very reasonable concern. And it's very straightforward for us to carry with us some kind of a document that establishes that, yes, we're up to date on our shots.
All right. So we'll get to the phones here in just a sec. I'm curious, you've been away from Europe for more than a year. Do you have you created your bucket list for where you're going to go first once you get to go back?
I've been really good at employing my traveler's mindset right here at home. It's been a very interesting experience for me, because this is the first. I literally spend 100 days a year in Europe ever since I graduated from school. And I'm over there working on my tours and my TV shows and my guidebooks. And this last year, I didn't even get on an airplane. And it's the first year I haven't been to Europe. So yeah, I'm excited to get home. But you know, while I've been homebound here, I've been excited to get home to Europe, you know, back to my stomping grounds in Europe. But while I've been home, I've just enjoyed this challenge of employing my traveler's mindset right here in Edmonds. And I've done things that I'm a workaholic. You know, I love my Europe. I just do Europe. I live and breathe and sleep Europe. I love my work. And what I've done this last year is I've learned how to cook. I've learned the joy of walking dogs. I've made friends with the hummingbirds on my deck. I know just where the sun sets. It's a different sensibility, and I'm loving it. I got to say, I'm taking this opportunity to embrace the fact that I'm stuck at home, and I'm using a traveler's mindset to make it stimulating and fun. A good traveler is curious. A good traveler strives to get out of his or her comfort zone, to try new things, to change their perspective, is interested in making mistakes and learning from them. And that's what I've been doing right here. And I just love it. Now, when I can travel again, I will. But when we got locked down, I really decided I'm not going to be chomping at the bit here. I'm not going to be spinning my wheels. While I'm home, I'm going to be in the moment. And then when I can travel again, whenever that happens, then I will get over there and do my work. And to answer your question about my bucket list, I'm such a workaholic. What I want to do, the first thing I do when I go back to Europe is gather my team of researchers and co-authors together. And we've got to see what's the wreckage from this pandemic after a year and a half or whatever of no income for all of our favorite little moms and pops, the little creative adventures, the little entrepreneurial adventures, the little enoteki and the trattorias and the bistros and the guest houses and the bed and breakfasts and the little tour companies. Who's still going to be standing? How many people have chucked it in and had to do something else? And so we're going to sweep through every place we cover in our 50 guidebooks, and we're going to make sure that we know who's still in business, and then we'll build it back up from there. So that'll be my challenge when I get back to Europe, and I can hardly wait.
What are the domestic destinations? You've talked more about traveling domestically in the United States, too, in your radio show that we air here on KSFC. Mm-hmm. What are some of the domestic destinations that you have on your that you've been thinking about?
You know, I'm so thankful that you run my radio show. In fact, I think we're run on like 500 stations now. And I think Spokane was one of the very, very first, if not the first station to, I think second or third station to run our show.
Yeah, right.
And I'm really thankful for that. And what I love about the radio show is that I don't need to be the expert. I'm the curious traveler. So we have guests who are experts about different places, and then I get to quiz them and dream about where they like to travel and so on. So we get a lot of domestic travel on our radio show, and I get to just learn from that. But I don't really have that much time to travel as I would like to in the United States. I'd love to spend some more time traveling. A few years ago, somebody said, why don't you travel around your own country a little bit? And I thought, that's a good idea. So I took it was a great experience. I went on a 20-city and 20-day road trip from Seattle to Tallahassee. Drove 5 hours a day every night, gave a lecture in a different small town, and saw a bit of the country on the way. Part of the pay was they had to give me a little potted tour, as they would say in England, a little one-hour walk in their town. So I got a little insider look at each town as I went and did that road trip. But, you know, you'd be surprised the places I have not seen in the United States. It's kind of embarrassing. But, you know, I spend 100 days a year in Europe, and that never gets old, and I'm enjoying that.
Mary from Republic writes about Ireland. She wants some tips on taking public transit versus renting a car. What do you have advice for Mary?
Well, Ireland is an island with a small population, and it's very Dublin-centric. So public transportation will probably go in and out of Dublin. And if you're going in and out of Dublin, that's fine. There's great connections from Dublin to Galway or Dublin to Cork or Dublin to Belfast. But if you're going to cut across the grain, that's where you're frustrated by public transportation. I personally like to drive in Ireland, but I will remind you, the roads are very narrow. The scenery is treacherously beautiful, treacherous because people have to look at it while they're driving. So, I wouldn't drive after dark in Ireland. I would remind you that you just got to take your time. The distances are short, but the roads are windy and oftentimes kind of slow. But I just love driving in Ireland, and you'll have more control and flexibility in Ireland with your own wheels. You wouldn't have to worry about that in the Netherlands or Germany or France, but in Ireland, you'll be happier to have your own wheels.
So I have a question. Diana from Sandpoint's calling, and I'm just sort of deciphering. She talked, the sheet I have says biodynamic winery recommendations in Europe. Are you familiar? Biodynamic?
Biodynamic is probably something about organic. I mean, I don't
Could
know.
Be. Yeah, okay.
I really don't get too into that. I just like great wine. And I'm not an environmentalist or a help in that when it comes to wine. I'm just a wine connoisseur with a simple taste and enjoy learning. So my favorite thing is to go to a small family-run winery. And I love, for me, one of the most beautiful things is to see the family name on the wine label. And you see them, they grip the bottle and they pour it with the family name showing. And they've got guests from the other hemisphere at their table. And you see grandma looking on proudly. And you know, there's generations of love going into that wine. And they're so proud of it. And they love to share it. And then served at that same table is what they call a 0-kilometer meal. Everything is right there from the farm, right there from the village. And it just makes a beautiful ensemble. So that's my focus when I'm in Europe, is to drink the local wine, eat the local food, drink it and eat it with people who know what they call a good marriage is, a nice connection. If you get the right cheese and the right ham with the right wine in the right season, with the right atmosphere from the people who grew it and made it, it spoils you. You come home, you go to an Italian restaurant, you just go, you know, it's just not quite right.
Well, you can tell in your TV show that you enjoy that. We catch some of those moments that you put on your TV show.
We have to have a nice meal in each show if at all possible.
Jill from
it's in my contract.
Yeah. Jill from Colbert in North Spokane. Travel tips for a woman who's traveling alone. She's worried about her safety. Do you have some thoughts there?
Yeah, well, I can't say what's safe for one person, man or woman, compared to another. It sort of depends on what is your feeling when you're out and about in the streets. But I would say if you felt safe walking around Spokane after dark or Seattle after dark, you would feel safe in a European city walking around after dark, if you use just common sense and good discretion. You can always wander into a dangerous neighborhood if you're not careful, but you want to just have a place that's well-lit and well-populated. And then just remember that thieves target Americans. So, Jill, I would remind you, from a violent crime point of view, Europe is very, very safe. From a petty theft and pickpocketing point of view, purse snatching point of view, Europe is dangerous. Not dangerous in general, but dangerous if you're a tourist, because, you know, the thieves target Americans, men or women. And not because they're mean, but because it's just the common sense thing to do. We got all the stuff in our purses and wallets. And, you know, we're just the logical sort of target. They're not going to knife you and mug you. They're just going to grab your purse and run. So be mindful of that. Leave your valuables in the hotel. Wear a money belt. Stay in well-lit, populated areas. Don't put your bag down. And you should be just fine.
Now, here's another one from Beverly in Spokane. She'd booked a trip to Vienna for this summer, for this summer, moving it to next summer. She wants to know how individual European countries are handling supports for small businesses and residents.
You mean during COVID?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting for me because we're interested here, all the PPP help and so on. And in Europe, they pay higher taxes and they have higher expectations from their governments during time like this. And it's inconsistent. And some countries seem to be doing a more efficient and generous job than others. Generally, I would say there's more support in Europe than there is in the United States. People just have higher expectations of their government. It's how their mindset with the higher taxes and higher services.
So would you say that they're then thinking about that? Are there certain countries that you would tell people that it's better to go to first in this, as you go through this pandemic, and wait a little while longer for other countries? Or do you not distinguish like that?
I wouldn't worry about that. My main thing is, if Europe's not all open, I'm not going. You got to be patient. There's no reason to be chomping at the bit here. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people, you know, kind of figuring out how can we game the system and how can I travel before everybody else and this and that. You know, it'll be clear when it's time to go. And if half of Europe is good and half of Europe is bad, I'm going to wait a couple months until all of Europe's good.
So you have been very busy, even though you've been stuck at home, you've been very busy doing different things. And I'm looking at your website. You have something you call Monday Night Travel. What's Monday Night Travel?
You know, I've been busier. I was just thinking today. I mean, like I've been doing interviews and having fun and writing and just there's so many things that we're doing right here at home. And, you know, I've got 100 people on my payroll and no revenue. And that's kind of expensive for a couple of years. I keep thinking, why am I not depressed? Because I'm used to making money and I'm just losing money this year. But my mission is not to make money. My mission is to impact the viewpoints, the perspectives of Americans, to help Americans better connect with our world. And it occurs to me, I'm doing a lot of that right now, even though we're not doing our tours and selling our guidebooks and making money. So I'm doing my mission, and that's how I'm profitable. And once we get traveling again, we'll start making money again. But I'm just enjoying doing this work. I'm at home. We're working on our new TV shows. We're making better radio shows than ever, I think. And and part of it is just, I just think we're all leaders in our own way. And just an hour ago, I posted something about how we all got to get our vaccinations. And I've got my Keep On Traveling t-shirt, and I'm clutching my passport, and I'm getting that shot. And I'm thinking, you know, when I got that shot, my endorphins just jumped for joy. But it wasn't a selfish kind of happiness. I was part of a community. And I was just with all of my neighbors and all of my people who have all of my friends and who have a sense of community. We know we owe it to each other to get our vaccination. I'm sort of disappointed that there's a lot of people that for some reason don't want to get this vaccination. But I feel like it's a community responsibility not to hold ourselves down as we get to herd immunity. So that's just something I feel like I like to offer and cheerlead.
We're talking with Rick Steves tonight. I'm Doug Nadvornik here on Spokane Public Radio.
Yes, I can hear you now.
There we go. Okay, we just had the wrong button pushed. George, you're on with Rick Steves.
Hi, Mr. Steves. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, George.
By way of background, I have two cruises scheduled. One of them is a Viking River cruise in late September. And that goes from Amsterdam to Basel with a pre and post in The Hague and Lucerne. Mm-hmm. The second cruise is Silver Sea in early January of 22. And that goes from Fort Lauderdale to Lima, Peru with a Panama Canal transit. One of my fears is if I get involuntarily shoved back on those cruises, that the cabins that I want for each cruise will become unavailable because both cabins are fairly desirable and in demand. At this point, I'm seriously considering rolling both cruises out 1 year, and I would like your thoughts, please.
Well, thanks, George. I don't know the ins and outs of getting the right cabin on different river cruises, but I would say if you're booking anything in advance during this time, you should have a very explicit and clear understanding of what are the cancellation policies. We're thinking about that right now with our tour program, and the whole theme is we need to be flexible. We need to be more generous. We need to understand that people have reasonable anxieties, and the tour company or the river cruise company or whatever needs to take the hit, not the customer. But I would read that in advance, and I would get it very clearly described to you so that if you have to cancel, you're not going to be losing a lot of money, because as part of the tourism industry, I'm embarrassed how a lot of tour companies and cruise companies and so on have jerked people around when it's beyond their control that COVID comes and they don't feel comfortable actually going. I think you should be okay in late September, I would just get the cancellation policies settled for you, but I'm afraid I can't, I wouldn't, as long as they've got a flexible and kind of a fair cancellation policy, I wouldn't set it back a whole year. If it's going to be expensive for you to cancel, and you can find that out just with a phone call, then I think you might consider delaying it, but that's just my quick take on that. Hey, Doug, I didn't even answer your question. You asked me earlier about our Monday night travel. And that's just an example of the fun we're having in helping people travel right now when they're at home. And every Monday night we host a webinar, and I didn't know how popular this is going to be, but I started out and I thought I'd get 500 or 600 people, and then we got 3,000, and then we did two per night and they both got 3,000. Then we had to up our webinar. Now we're getting 5,000 people twice well, 7,000 people, 5,000 actually show up because it's a free party. But every Monday night, I get to drink and eat and travel and invite 10,000 people over to my house. And it's just a lot of fun. A couple nights ago, we were getting primed for St. Patrick's Day. So obviously, we were traveling in Ireland. Next Monday, I'm going to be joined by Samantha Brown, who has another public television TV mm-hmm. show. She's a lot of fun. We're going to go to Vienna. After that, I'm going to share my one-hour Eastern Europe specials like I did for Christmas. And it's just a chance for me to gather together with my travelers, with my finger on the pause button, and look at some of our shows and hit pause and let them know what's going on and what to look for. And there's our producer, Simon. You haven't seen him before. Well, you have seen him before. He's the mysterious bearded guy that always eats with me. And, you know, all these little insights about the fun of making a TV show on the road. So I've just been really enjoying it. And if people are curious, if they got Monday Night Travel, you just go to ricksteves.com and it's free. You just get a link and you can join us. And it's just a lot of fun. And it's becoming a kind of a food thing. I didn't realize it, but everybody wants to know, what am I going to be eating? And then they go shopping and they get the same stuff and we eat and drink together. It's quite a party. And I do it twice. So I'm pretty loose by the end of the second show.
328-5729 or 1-800-328-5729. The operator here has figured out how to get phone calls on the air. Craig from Spokane writes, he asks about using Google Translate when traveling, and he asks, is that rude? What are the guidelines and manners for, I guess, figuring out how to translate and say a few words in the dialect of the place you're in?
That's a good question, Craig. And I would say if that stops you from actually learning a few words, I'd say it is rude. I mean, if that gives you the excuse not to learn how to say, you know, please, thank you, you're welcome, all that, good morning, good night, I think you should not use your app. I don't use any of those apps. You know, if I wanted to, you can get an app and you shine it at a sign and it translates it for you just like that. But I think that kind of makes people numb to the language. I don't speak any language other than English. It's nothing to brag about, but I explain that because most of my travelers are in the same pickle. We Americans are expert monoglots. We speak one language and we speak it well. We are lucky because we're the one group that can afford to be so lazy linguistically. We speak the world's linguistic common denominator. I mean, if a Greek meets a Norwegian hiking in the Alps, how are they going to communicate? Broken English. What Greek speaks Norwegian? Do I want to whip out my app and translate it with that? I've never thought it's worth the trouble. I don't need to. I just talk to people in what Voice of America calls simple English. Easy words, no contractions, easy, I enunciate every letter. I choose people who are likely to speak English, young people, well-educated people, people in tourism, they'll speak English. I've been saying this for 30 years, and since then a whole generation has grown up speaking better English than ever. So, you know, have fun with the apps if you want to, but I don't burden myself with them, and I certainly don't let them keep me from learning a few of the polite words when I'm in a country.
Sure. Diana from Sandpoint again, you've been so so patient, so gracious. We've got you on now with Rick. Go ahead.
Hi, Doug.
Good to
and
see you.
Rick, thank you. I love your show.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm so thankful to be on in Spokane and everywhere where this station airs. And it's just a wonderful chance for me to share my love of travel, whether on the radio or on TV.
So what do you want to ask Rick?
I also wanted to know what type of or what small town in Europe you might recommend.
Well, I just wrote a book called For the Love of Europe, and it's 400 pages talking about all my favorite small towns. And that's what I love when I'm traveling, is getting away from the big cities. Sometimes when I'm over there, Diane, I get fried. When you're really working hard and pedal to the metal, and finally my nervous system or something, I just get wasted and I can't even concentrate. And I need to what I call convalesce. And if I think about what are my favorite small towns, well, where do I go to convalesce? And there's a handful of places I love to just shuffle around in slippers and a robe for a couple of days. One of them is on the Mosel River. The Mosel River is the sleepy little sister of the Rhine. If your image of the Rhine is vineyards and ruined castles and lazy boats going down a winding river, that's not the Rhine. That's the Mosel. And it's the little tiny version that comes into the Rhine at Koblenz. And there's a little town on the Mosel called Beilstein. And that's where I go in Germany, and I love it. If I'm in Italy, I go north of Milan, 1 hour north of Milan on Lake Como. It's the most romantic of the lakes of northern Italy. And I stay in a place called Varena. It's just across from the famous resort town of Bellagio. And in Varena, I just love to take a break from my hard-hitting itinerary and catch my breath. And it's famous in Italy as the honeymooner's town, the Luna di Mille. And I can just sit on the balcony of my hotel and sip my spritz and have just a great time.
Well, thank you. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you, Diana. Good to talk with you. One that you have that I had a chance to go to when our son went to Europe about 20 years ago, we went with him, was Rothenburg in Germany. And tell us a little about Rothenburg.
Well, Rothenburg is quite a touristy place today because it was a real important place 500 or 600 years ago. I mean, back when Frankfurt was just a wide spot in the road, Rothenburg was a sizable city. And Rothenburg is on what we call the Romantic Road. And ever since I was a kid, it's been the main way to cover Germany. It goes from the Rhine River down to Munich and down to the gateway to the Alps, where they'd cross over the Brenner Pass to get from Germany to Italy in the medieval times. And that trade route through the heartland of Germany, today's touristic Romantic Road, is so interesting today because it was so wealthy in the Middle Ages. And that's where all the trade was. That's where all the art was. That's where the beautiful half-timbered buildings are. And Rothenburg is the sort of the queen of all these beautiful half-timbered towns. It's beautiful. You can remember, Doug, it's walled, mm-hmm. and it's got these wonderful cobbled higgly-piggly lanes. And it's just a wonderland for tourists because you got plenty of great places to eat, wonderful little family-run hotels, and an amazing amount of art in that little town. I mean, most people just get sidetracked and do their Christmas trinket shopping there. You probably got some Christmas ornaments hanging on your tree from Rothenburg, and most people who go there do. And but you could look at the art. It's got the best wood carving that I've seen in Germany, the Riemenschneider altarpiece in the church mm-hmm. there. And you could go to the Medieval Crime and Punishment Museum. And this is not just a papier-mâché, gallery of torture devices that you see in a lot of towns. This is honest-to-goodness artifacts that give you an idea of what was crime and punishment like in the Middle Ages. And because there's a real thing, you know. And and then in the evening, you can follow the night watchman around. Did you follow the night watchman? He takes a walk for an hour, and he's got his lantern, and he blows his horn. All's well. He wakes people up every hour blowing his horn. All's well. He says, you didn't want to hear the horn, but you didn't not want to hear the horn because you wanted to be sure all was well. And you take this walk, and he does it at 7 o'clock in German and at 9 o'clock in English. And it's just a fun experience. So lots to do in Rothenburg. It's touristy. And I used to be in that game where everybody's trying to find, quote, the untouristy Rothenburg. And I finally just declared, there is no untouristy Rothenburg. Rothenburg is discovered. Yeah. It's great. I love it. Just do it right.
Let's go to Richard, 328-5729. Richard, you're on with Rick Steves.
I just wanted to ask you, if you aren't doing any traveling anywhere, do you have to have a vaccination for the COVID?
Sure. You're going to have a vaccination. If you don't get a vaccination, you're going to be pretty much shut out of things.
Okay.
So you'll be staying home and people will really be able to go places safely. But people who don't believe in vaccinations, they're just going to be sort of, it's not going to be very polite because you won't be invited in. But it's because you want to take care of the people who responsibly got their vaccinations.
Let's go to Ben from Spokane, who has a question. We were just talking about Rothenburg. He's talking about Bavaria. Hi, Ben. You're on with Rick Steves.
Hey, guys. Hey, Rick. How's it going?
Hey, Ben. It's nice to be here. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, I had a question. I wanted to go to Bavaria, but I didn't really have the money, so I was thinking about going to Leavenworth. How does that stack up?
I hate Leavenworth.
Oh, really?
Sorry, if you've been to Bavaria, Leavenworth is, that was too heavy. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. But it's not Bavaria. It's a touristy gimmick. So go there, have fun, have a beer, pretend you're in Bavaria if you want to. But I'm afraid it's not, you can't say you've been anywhere near close to Bavaria if you go to Leavenworth.
All right, good information.
All right, thanks, Ben. So, what makes Bavaria so distinctive, Rick?
Well, Bavaria, you know, Germany is the size of Montana, and after World War II, it lost and it got divided by the four allies. So there's a French, British, Russian, and American sector. America got Bavaria and Munich. So Americans know Bavaria because for a whole generation, we had soldiers staying there and we'd visit there and that was where we were comfortable. And our image of Germany is Bavaria. So it's funny, when you think about Germany as an American, you're probably thinking about Bavaria, you know, lederhosen and clinking big glasses in a beer hall and so on. I just love Bavaria. To me, it's the quintessential Germany. In so many countries, the southern area is more laid back and more, you know, live for today, and the northern part is more hard driven and industrious. And that's the case in Italy. You could say it's the case in the United States. It's the case in Germany. And Bavaria is the more relaxed part. Roman Empire went as far north as the border of Bavaria and the Rhine River. And that's where they said, well, that's enough. And then centuries later, the borderline between the Roman Empire and barbarian Europe ended up to be the same as the borderline between Catholic Europe and Protestant Europe. So Bavaria is more Catholic, and the north of Germany is more Protestant. Bavaria is in the foothills of the Alps. Bavaria's got the most, in a lot of ways, the most charming and livable big city, and that's Munich. You see, after World War II, a lot of cities were bombed to smithereens in Germany. And when in the late 1940s, they had to decide, how are they going to be rebuilt? Frankfurt and Munich were both bombed the same. Frankfurt decided to rebuild on what they called the Manhattan Plan. And Bavaria in Munich, they started to rebuild their medieval plan. So today, Munich feels like a Walt Disney recreation of a medieval town in a lot of ways. And Frankfurt feels like Manhattan. And Munich made a good investment if they wanted to have tourism. And Frankfurt made a good investment if they wanted to be a financial center. And today, Frankfurt is nicknamed Bankfurt because they got all these skyscrapers and big banks.
Yeah.
And Munich is the charming place with the most tourists. As a tour guide, I just love Munich. And also, Doug, we got to remember, in 1860, there was no Germany. So there was a handful of German-speaking states, each with their own heritage. And Bavaria was a proud, independent, middle-sized power, which for 600 years was ruled by the Wittelsbach family. So when you go to Munich, you're looking at sites of the independent country of Bavaria that predates the creation of Germany. And you're looking at the crown jewels and parliaments of the Wittelsbach family, who ruled Bavaria just like the Habsburgs ruled the Austrian Empire.
Yeah. Phone lines are open. We've got about 20 minutes left with Rick Steves, 328-5729 or 1-800-328-5729. Rick, you produced a program entitled Why We Travel. Can you talk about some of the main themes from that program and why you think those were important?
Yeah, Doug, this was an interesting challenge for us because when COVID hit, every 2 years for 30 years, I've brought out a new series for KSPS and channels all over the country. And we were set to bring out a new series this last fall, but then COVID hit and we could not go to Europe to do our two shows on Poland and two shows on Iceland, which would have rounded out our latest series. So we had to release a truncated series this last season. And we added one extra show, which is called For the Love of Europe. And it's a poem I wrote, a half an hour long poem to celebrate why we travel. And it was one of the most wonderful creative challenges I've ever had, was to, with my staff, put this show together. And it talks about philosophically and emotionally and spiritually why we travel. And there's three ways to travel. You can travel as a tourist, you can travel as a traveler, and you can travel as a pilgrim. And it's not right or wrong, but it's just very nice to travel with a little bit of each of those. I mean, the tourist has a bucket list. The tourist wants to go have fun and, you know, go crazy on the beach or whatever, and that's fine. The traveler, I think, travels to learn, to get out of his or her comfort zone and try new things and learn about that country. And then the pilgrim leaves home, I think, to learn more about himself or herself. A pilgrim seeks meaning, you know, and you can do that. And you can do that in 2021, just like you can do it 500 years ago if you were some sort of a pilgrim. And this is a half-hour show, and people can watch any of my shows anytime for free if they go to ricksteves.com. And you can just go into the TV section and watch Why We Travel, or you can wait until it airs locally on public television. But thanks for asking about that. I just really enjoyed it's sort of a greatest hits look at why we travel. And what I wove it together was with my old journals. I've got all these journals I lovingly wrote before I was a professional travel writer, back when I was a teenager. And these are 200-page hardbound books with beautiful penmanship and tiny script. I can't even read my writing now, much less anybody else. But back then I actually had good penmanship. And I vividly documented everything I did when I was a teenager. All the kids were out drinking and I was back at the youth hostel writing in my journal. And I haven't even opened them for 40 years. And I ventured into them during this COVID time. And they inspired me to dig deeply into why we travel.
You've also talked about the concept of travel as a political act. You did a program that was a lecture about that. And talk about that, too.
Travel as a political act. You know, when I'm at home, I'm always given lectures. I spend 100 days a year in Europe in a normal year. And the rest of the year, I'm kind of home, but I'm on the road a lot giving talks. I go to Spokane a fair amount to give talks. And I would give talks, and over the years, my teaching evolved. At first, it was European travel cheap. It was catching the cheap plane. It was packing light. It was finding a good hotel and, you know, sussing out all the sites. And then I thought, well, you can read the guidebook for that. And then in the 90s, I started teaching appreciation of art and history for travelers. And then I wrote a book about that. And then since about 9/11, really, I found my passion for giving lectures about travel was to inspire and encourage Americans to get out of their comfort zone and broaden their perspective and come home with what I think is the most beautiful souvenir, and that's a broader perspective. And when I looked at it, I've realized the most powerful experiences I've had is when I am out of my element, when I'm in Morocco or Turkey or Egypt or India or Thailand or China or Scandinavia, you know, or Ethiopia. So every time I do an adventure like that, I learn a lot, and I write a chapter about travel as a political act. And we made a one-hour TV special that's aired a number of times around the country. And people can watch that if they want to on my website again, or they can pick up the book Travel as a Political Act. But I just love the idea that when you travel well, it can be a transformational experience. And you take home, as I mentioned, the most beautiful souvenir. And that's an empathy for the other 96% of humanity. Think about how frightened our country is right now. Our country is quite confused about what's going on in this world. And the most frightened people in our society, I have found, and I've thought a lot about this lately, the most frightened people are the people who have yet to travel, people who don't have a passport, people buried deep in the middle of this great nation of ours. And I've decided, or I've realized that travel, or fear, fear is for people who don't get out very much. And the flip side of fear is understanding. And we gain understanding when we travel. I'm not a particularly courageous person, but I'm not afraid of the world because I've spent 100 days a year exploring it. And to me, the world is filled with joy. It's filled with love. It's filled with beautiful people. And I'm the kind of American that was more inclined to build bridges and less inclined to want to build walls. And that's because I've traveled. I'm sad that we no longer say bon voyage. When I grew up, people said, have a good trip. Bon voyage. Have a good trip. Now what do you say? Have a safe trip. No. Have a safe trip. When somebody tells me I have a safe trip, I'm inclined to say, well, you have a safe stay at home. Because if you knew the statistics, and I know statistics are optional these days, but if you knew the statistics, you would know that it is safer to leave this country than to stay in it. I'm not saying it's dangerous to stay here. I'm just saying it's the risks are minuscule. But statistically, there's no doubt about it. If you care about your loved ones and you want them to be safer, you'd get them out of this country and go to Europe. It's safer over there. Yeah. So have a safe stay at home.
All right, let's go to the back to the phones. Katie from Spokane has a question about Belfast. Hi, Katie. You're on with Rick Steves. Katie?
Hi, Rick. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Well, my daughter's an Irish dancer. My daughter's an Irish dancer, and we might be going to Belfast next year.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering if you could give me some advice about places to stay and things to do there.
I absolutely love Belfast. And, you know, there was a time when Belfast was a little bit nerve-wracking because of the troubles between the Catholics and the Protestants in Ireland, but those days are gone now. And there's a wonderful fast train that connects Dublin and Belfast, so it's very easy to do Belfast, even as a day trip from Dublin, if that's all the time you had. And if you're a dancer, I was impressed by the music in Belfast. There's probably better Irish dancing elsewhere because Belfast has a little different heritage than the Republic of Ireland when it comes to traditional music and dancing. But Belfast is a booming city right now, and it's a good example of second cities. You know, all over Europe, people are, you know, they always go to Edinburgh. Why not Glasgow? They always go to Paris. Why not Marseille? They always go to Munich or Frankfurt. Why not Hamburg? And they always go to Dublin. Why not Belfast? These are the industrial cities. You know, they always go to Seattle. Why not Tacoma? Belfast is the city where they built the Titanic, and now there's a wonderful gallery there. The whole waterfront, which used to be derelict, is now turned into a wonderful pedestrian mall. And I was just there. I was just there in 2019, the last year I was traveling, and I just had a great time in Belfast updating my chapter on Belfast from my Ireland book. And if you wanted specifics on where to eat and sleep and all that kind of thing, you just need to get a good guidebook. And there's a guy named Rick Steves who's written a humdinger.
Rick, I've read lots of your, I think I've read lots of your guidebooks because I've traveled before. Uh-huh. And I was wondering, what kind of events would there be in Northern Ireland, maybe in May or June?
I don't know offhand, but whenever you're traveling, I would say find out. I mean, there's always sporting events, and it's a great way to get a different slice of a culture. One of my fondest memories in Ireland was to go to a hurling match. Hurling is kind of like, it's sort of the Irish sport. I mean, they play soccer, you know, and they call it, I think they call it football. But the hurling is more Irish, and hurling is a fast and rugged game. It's like airborne hockey with no injury timeouts, something like that. And you just pack into the stadium, and the fans are so enthusiastic. I learned so many new clever ways to swear when I was in a stadium going to a hurling match. It's just people really into it. And I just thought, I'm in a stadium here with 40,000 people, and I don't think there's another tourist here. It was totally locals. And just be sure you get the right colors to wear so you don't get in the wrong side of the stadium with the wrong crowd, because there's a lot of people that are very, very enthusiastic about their sporting event. But you can go to the races, you can go to the hurling match, the soccer match, but it's just important wherever you're traveling to ask locally or go online and figure out what sporting event can I go to. And it doesn't need to be a big famous team and a big famous stadium. It can be a humble, small-town event, too. I think those, a lot of times, are much more accessible, much less expensive, and sometimes more charming.
Hope you get a chance to go.
Are there ferries in Belfast to go across the ocean?
Are there ferries?
Ferries.
Not really. You would fly. I mean, you could take a ferry from Northern Ireland over to Scotland if you wanted, but these days it's just cheaper to fly.
Thank you, Katie. I appreciate your time. Well, let's move on to Jen from Spokane wants to talk about solo travel. Hi, Jen. You're on with Rick Steves.
Hello, Mr. Steves. Thank you for being here. Being with us, at least on the radio. I wanted to ask, are there places in Europe where you prefer to travel solo and places where you would rather travel in a group, such as a group tour? So do you have any preferences for solo travel as opposed to group travel?
No, Jen, I think the pros and cons of solo travel versus traveling with friends or with the group or with a small tour or a big tour, they're the same in every country, I would think. It's never occurred to me this country is good for solo travel and this country is not. The question is, do you want to go on your own, or do you want to go to share the experience? You know, when you're, I think the best way to travel is with a well-matched partner. The worst way to travel is with the wrong partner. I'd much rather go alone than with the wrong partner. So it's good to figure that out before you get over there. I do most of my traveling alone just because I like to turn on a dime. And I find there's plenty of people to meet as you go on the road if you are just out and about. But it is fun to be able to share the experience. It's more expensive to go on your loans. It's more expensive to go alone. Because when there's two of you, you split the hotel rooms, you split the taxi fees, you can just live more economically. And then the big question is, for a lot of people, are you going to go on your own or are you going to take a tour? And, you know, the tour is, I get a lot of people on my tours that just say, I don't normally would like to take tours, but they end up taking our tour and they realize you can do a tour where you weave together the adventure and the challenge of doing it on your own with the economy and the efficiency of having a guide and somebody else doing the driving in a big bus. And one thing great about a bus tour is you are sharing the cost of the transportation with however many people are on that bus. So it's relatively expensive for two people to drive a car when 24 people can share a bus.
Yes, yes. And I've had experiences where I've gone on a group tour and it's been so much more informative. So I would learn more about the history of the place, for example, and as opposed to somebody taking me around and telling me, well, this is such and such a church and that's such and such a park, but I don't have the story behind it.
Right. Well, that's a good guide needs to give context. That's really important. And I just feel like a lot of people can flounder around Europe and spend a lot of time making mistakes, going to the wrong places and not understanding what they're looking at. Or you take a tour and you've got an expert that's got all the ducks in a row and everything is just like clockwork and they connect you with local guides and local experiences. And it may cost a little bit more, but I think you experience 50% more with none of the stress per day when you go on a tour. One thing I just might mention, I've got 100 guides that I work with in Europe. They're freelancers and none of them have any work right now. And guides just have to teach. They have to enthuse. They have to share. I'm kind of that way, I think, when I talk about Europe. And I love my guides, and they are just so frustrated right now because they can't do this touring. So what we've done is we've created a guides marketplace. It's at my website at ricksteves.com. And in the place where we normally sell our tours, we're not able to sell our tours. All I want to do is to connect all of the travelers that wish they were traveling with all of my guides who wish they were teaching. And then my guides are doing all this stuff. Most of it's free. The vast majority of it's free, and it's language lessons. It's cooking lessons, it's virtual tours, and it's just a lot of fun. So we must have 50 guides in this guides marketplace at ricksteves.com. And it's a great way to just to make a friend with a European during a time when all these great guides don't have any opportunity to do their work.
I have just a few minutes left with Rick Steves. We'll see if we can get a couple more calls in. Esther has a question about Scandinavia. Hi, Esther. You're on with Rick Steves.
Hi. So, good evening. I got see you discuss Sicily earlier this evening on the television station here in Spokane. But my question tonight is about Scandinavia. And if you could recommend maybe one of your guides that can discuss taking a trip up the Norwegian coast to the Arctic Circle.
Well, that's the Hurtigruten route, the old post boat that goes up the coast, and it stops at each little town. Many towns are not accessible by car, and their lifeline to the world is this daily postal ship that goes by, and they rent out some rooms in it, and you can go all the way up to North Cape on that. And it takes some time. You know, it's most people don't go round trip. They'll take it all the way up and then they'll fly back, or they'll fly up and take it back down. But it's a beautiful way to, if you're inclined to explore the coast of Norway, to see the whole thing from Bergen all the way up to the north tip. Remember, Norway is a long, skinny country. It's as far from Oslo to the top of Norway as it is from Oslo all the way to Rome in Italy. And there's only 5 million people or something in all of Norway. And it's a remote and dramatically beautiful island, our country. And you can see all the islands and the inland passage and the fjords and so on when you take that route that you're talking. So I think it's an exciting opportunity, Esther. And if you have the time and the money to do that.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling, Esther. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Ann from Colbert. Hi, Ann. You're on with Rick Steves.
Hello. Thank you, Doug and Rick.
Sure.
So appreciative.
Sure. What's your question?
Doing the show tonight. So we had plans to travel to Nice in September, but we're kind of wary of that due to the pandemic. So when would you yourself, Rick, feel comfortable traveling to Europe?
Well, that's the big question, and nobody knows. I would think it's going to be okay by September, but it depends on how well we do with our vaccinations, and it depends on how well Europe does. And we could do great, and Europe could falter, or Europe could do great, and we could falter. I just think both societies have to whoop this pandemic by taking their shots. It's not that tough. Just line up and get jabbed. And when societies do that, they get herd immunity, and then they can travel. And when we don't do it, we don't have herd immunity, and it's not safe to travel. I would just not make that decision at this point because there's no way to make it. As far as my business goes, we've got the hotels reserved, we've got the buses ready and the guides lined up, and we've got people on waiting lists to do our tours this fall, but we're not confident enough that we can do it to take deposits yet. And I wouldn't recommend committing myself to anything that short into the future. So I would say in a couple of months, we'll know better. And I would also say that individuals will be traveling long before tours will be traveling. I think I just was giving a talk for a foreign study program a couple hours ago, and we were actually visited live by students from the United States in Barcelona and in Rome. And they were having a wonderful time living in Barcelona and living in Rome, just like we're living in Spokane or Seattle. But when's it going to be for open for travel? Nobody knows at this point. Anybody that says they know is just full of baloney. We don't know.
Makes sense. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ann.
Yeah. Happy travel dreaming.
So let's sneak in one final call with David. Hi, David. You're on with Rick Steves.
Hello.
Hi, you're on.
Hey, David.
Thank you. We some time back, we had considered a trip to England to see my grandfather's roots in Bolton, Lancashire. And the guides we were looking at said, don't bother to go there. I'm wondering what advice you'd give to people who want to mix genealogy with their trip.
Well, there's lots of places that tourism just doesn't happen, international tourism. The place you just mentioned, you know, I've written the book on England, and I don't know where that is or what it's all about. So it doesn't mean it's not any good. It's just, there's a lot to the countries that are not covered in guidebooks, to be honest. Wherever you're traveling, if you're interested in genealogy, there are lots of services and resources that you can weave into your travel plans. But you need to research that in advance and then find out if you need to make an appointment or a reservation or whatever. And then you work it into your itinerary. Also, there are local guides that are really adept at showing Americans around with their heritage in mind. There's certain guides that specialize in that. So I would just say, do your research online before you go, and then know what your options are and make reservations for them. But it's for people who are curious about their heritage, there's lots of opportunities for that, and people love it. So it's just you got to do your homework.
Rick, it's been a great pleasure to have you on. Thank you for being so generous with your time.
Doug, thank you. And you're you have a warm spot in my tour guide heart because you and your station picked up our show so long ago, and I'm happy to drop by, and you got some great travelers listening, and I hope it was a good hour for all involved.
Fabulous. Good to talk with you. We hope to do it again sometime.
Okay.
Happy travels. Okay. Our event donors tonight have been Strong Solutions, Hamilton Studio, MTR Communications, and Thomas Hammer Coffee Roasters.